This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on?
Oh, having a good time. Nice vacation almost from the podcast. I definitely noticed that we weren't doing it. I don't know if I'll say I miss it. No, I definitely missed it. I missed getting to talk to you, talk to the people out there, do the podcast, everything. A lot of wrestling, obviously. It's kind of funny. So many other places ramped up their output, and me and you decided to take the time off. But that's the difference between, let's say, a Pete Schumacher and a Timothy Buckner and maybe a Dylan Hales, is that we were busy watching wrestling instead of talking about wrestling. How you been, Pete?
But I'm glad Dylan took up the mantle and did some pod blasts for all the shows he watched and got instant reaction right up there on the Place to Be and stuff. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it really was.
I'll tell you, I had an absolute blast. I think WrestleMania should be in New Orleans every year. I mean, I didn't hit as many shows as I thought I was going to hit. I ended up hitting six. Normally I would have hit eight in those days, but one of the things was me and Ben were there first, and Johnny P on Friday came in at noon. Then our other friend Ben came in at 5 o'clock on Friday, so like the two other shows were at noon and four, and I could have gone to them, but I would have felt like an asshole ditching everybody to go to watch wrestling while Ben's picking them up at the airport and stuff. So I did not buy tickets for those shows because I think that's pretty chicken shit. If I was the guy driving and my buddy was with me, ditches everybody so he can go watch live wrestling while he's doing airport runs and stuff. But I still saw plenty of great wrestling. I'll tell you my top 10 live matches I saw. I want to say that NXT show was probably one of my, if not, it might have been my best match, live show I've ever been to. Great show, obviously. And that leads up to my number one match was Gargano and Ciampa at 5 stars from NXT. My second favorite match was Matt Riddle versus Will Ospreay from the WWN Super Show, and I gave that 4 3/4. NXT again, I got Almas and Black at 4.5. Progress, I have Walter and Zack Sabre Jr. at 4.5. NXT, I have the ladder match at 4.5. At the WrestleCon Super Show, I have Ishii versus Cobb at 4.25. Then I had Bloodsport. I had Walter versus Lawler at 4.25. Janela Spring Break, I had Walter versus PCO at 4.25. And then the two Bloodsport shows, along with another NXT, which makes it 11. All of them at 4 stars. I had Riddle and Suzuki, Gage and Gargano, and Ember Moon and Baz Baszler. Just great wrestling live. It was just a tremendous trip because, you're like, we go to an afternoon show, go to an evening show. After the evening, go down to Bourbon Street and drink and watch people watch because, honestly, Bourbon Street, have you ever been there, Tim?
Fortunately, I have not been there. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you can have an open container. You don't have to. You can walk from bar. They serve beer at windows at the bars, so you can walk with a beer in the streets. It's like Mos Eisley's Cantina from Star Wars would be the only thing I can think of where there's so much villainy and, you're seeing people passed out on the street throwing up. Wrestlers all over the place. You're running into wrestlers constantly. I was not like I was out there for hours on end. I was there usually usually a couple hours, because that's all you really need to be out there for, or you're going to get in trouble. But yeah, it was fun, you know, mixing wrestling and alcohol, and the food was just absolutely incredible. The po' boys and the gumbo and Bananas Fosters and the etouffee and the jambalaya, just great, great stuff. I mean, honestly, I wish it was in New Orleans every year, just because you're able to balance it out. Next year is going to be challenging with it. It's like you're going to have to almost plan. It's almost like you're going to have to. It's almost like you're going to have two or three destinations. You're either going to go there for Mania and stay and like be by the big city type of stuff, and then, or you're going to do the Indies, which will probably be over out in New Jersey and stuff. So it's just going to be. It's going to be interesting on how that's set up next year, and I'm sure I'll get into that. Place to Be Nation, Mania Day, rented a bar, a patio on the bar, and barbecued, and we drank and barbecued, shot the shit. Again, those guys stepped up. Nick Duke, master of the grill, a guy kicked serious ass, and he was double-fisting and barbecuing, so... God bless the man.
That makes me worry what he's awesome. Using to flip the meat around. You know what I mean? He's got
beer. Well, he put one down to flip the meat. Okay. That's why nothing was burnt. But, man, yeah, I mean, it was just a lot of fun. Just a big, good turnout. Probably about, you know, I'd say about 40 people were there. Just great time. And that's always good to catch up with those guys. And ran into a bunch of them during the shows, because there's a lot of hardcore indie guys like me over there, like Steve Willey and his crew. It was funny, at Bloodsport, we were right next to one of them we were next to Todd Weber, like two seats away from us at Bloodsport. I mean, it's just so random. I mean, that's when we had assigned seats, because we actually bought floor seats for that one. The venues at the WWN shows were fantastic. The seats were great. General Mission were fantastic. I didn't like this the WrestleCon as much, General Mission, because it was bleachers and my ass hurt, so I had to stand up about 100 times during the show because I don't have a big ass, so it hurts when you're on a bleacher, as opposed to the nice padded seat at WrestleCon. I mean, at the WWN events and stuff. Got a lot of great wrestling. Walter, it was so awesome to see Walter work live for the first time. Riddle had a great week. Nick Gage comes across live as, like, the most intimidating wrestler on the planet, like the baddest man on the planet. So cool. The concept shows... You gamble with it, but man, they really paid off. And you saw Janela's show just drew a huge amount of people at midnight. We run into Meltzer's leaving the other show before Janela's show. He wasn't doing the midnight show, and him and Alvarez sneaking out. Just a great, great, great time. Did you watch a lot of it live or on streaming? Did you catch a lot of the matches?
I did not really watch any of it live. I did watch most of it. I think I still need to catch the Progress shows, because they haven't...
Yeah, they haven't popped up. I only went to one of those live, but it was a good show. But Walter and Zack Sabre just tore it down and stuff.
Yeah, and I need to watch the... I want to watch the Super Show, the WrestleCon Super Show. So I haven't seen that Ishii versus Cobb match, but
that was really good. They also had a fun spot fest of Rey Fénix and who was it? Who was in that damn thing? There was Fénix and Rey Oris, Bandito, and someone else. I forget who. Oh yeah, and Famita. A really fun spot fest. They had a cool four way with Ospreay and Strickland and Sammy Guevara, and one of the Brooks guys from Progress. I think maybe it was Adam Brooks or Chris Brooks.
Chris Brooks was there, I know for sure. So
okay. So it was one of the Brooks, and that was a lot of fun. Even the Jerry Lawler thing was interesting for a minute, and that didn't last long, so that was fun. So So yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff, and then seeing a lot of the Japanese talent. As the only thing bad about it was poor Flip Gordon as the big surprise in the main event when they have Tanahashi come out in the match before as a surprise. So you know, that's like less like the epitome of a fart in the church, you know, with Flip Gordon. Like that was one of the run of biggest jokes was what was the biggest disappointment in a surprise, Nicholas in Mania or Flip Gordon in the main event at WrestleCon Super Show. But yeah, I didn't see a bad show. Everything was good, at least good. Some of these things were actively fantastic. You know, there's some things I would have done differently, like the clusterfuck on for Janela. I would have booked it a little, maybe gone 15 minutes instead of 45 or whatever it was. Yeah,
it sucks because it's part of the charm of the whole thing, but it feels like it's like almost pointless. But you know, Janela's gonna do his own thing, and you gotta just let him have it.
Yeah, so you had that go 45, and then it follows up with the main event of him and Sasuke. Sasuke going fucking 37, 40-something, maybe 40 minutes there, too. So that was like watching those guys work, seeing these guys kill their body in a match that I just didn't like at all. It was just nuts because they were just killing themselves. But God bless. I mean, you had two guys over freaking 40 working their asses off. And I mean, I mean, you heard me say it earlier, man. I just said Walter and PCO is going to be coming out of this Mania. He's coming to steal the show, and he almost stole Mania weekend. And in a way he did, man. It's PCO is, might be one of the most over guys now on the indie scene after this performance. And, he's embracing the social media, and, the guy, it seems like he's getting a lot more bookings coming out of, Mania weekend, and God bless him for working so hard, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I thought that match was fantastic. I think you going through your top 10, I could see a couple of little things that I maybe liked a little bit more than you, some stuff that I flip-flop on compared to what you like. But yeah, it was pretty in line with what you were saying there, including that match with Walter and PCO. I thought that match was fantastic.
Yeah, it really was. And yeah, the two biggest pops I had all weekend, live experience, it was either A, the PCO Walter big chop battle, which they built to. It's so refreshing when you build to it instead of shooting your wad 2 minutes into the match. You know, you've seen plenty of times when these guys they go right to it right off the bat, and it means nothing. Here PCO and Walter they finally built to this epic one. So either that was the biggest pop, or the going into the finish of Riddle and Ospreay. Was the most biggest reaction during a match I saw. Will Ospreay, he's more over than probably anybody, almost anyone down there. The reaction you get from him live is that he's a superstar. And watching this guy, man, he was working his ass off even when he didn't need to. I mean, taking these insane bumps when he didn't need to, and then the reports I heard of people seeing him with his girlfriend at the hotel was like, he looked like a dead man walking, and here he is killing himself for people. So for all the doucheness the dude does, and you don't always agree with the psychology in the matches. I mean, you might not like his matches, or you might not get his psychology, but you can never say he doesn't work hard, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that match with Riddle was, for me, my match of the weekend. So, I mean, like, as you talk about, like, some of his stuff or whatever not being so great, I mean, that match was
fantastic. I think,
yeah, amazing, and gets a lot of credit for a big weekend to me being clearly the standout of the weekend, so.
Yeah, and I probably would have gone 5 on it if they didn't do a 1 count. I didn't like the 1 count. I think the 2 count would have been better off.
Right, and I think I was in some ways, and I think in some ways I may have been an easier grader on it in general, just because of the fact that, I mean, this is two guys who I am pretty negative on, not super negative. You know, I don't hate either guy, but
I don't want to say you shitbag on them, but you're definitely you see flaws in their game.
Yeah, and I pick on those two guys because I think that they can do better a lot of times, and I thought that coming together, they really somehow bridged that gap really well together.
Yeah, they really did, and. Riddle is a guy who had a really versatile weekend. I mean, you see him great working with Suzuki. Him and, I mean, obviously him and Ospreay, we talked about. He had a fun match with James Ellsworth at Janela Spring Break. He had a fun six-man tag in Progress. His match with Sakamoto was really fun too. I mean, just a lot of different aspects. And you see him working the, because they had Bloodsport, they had all seconded people, and you see him working the apron, how good he is at that. Working the tag, working the apron in the tag match he was really good. So I mean, you know, he was able to show what an athlete he is. But then working with Ellsworth, it was still a Matt Riddle match, but they also threw some comedy spots in there, and I thought Riddle handled it well, and it made sense because it was like, you know, he went for his big knee and doesn't hit him in the chin because Ellsworth doesn't have a chin. So I mean, stuff like that, it worked. And so he had a really standout. Walter came and and had a hell of a weekend. Sabre Jr. I thought had a great weekend. Of all the Japanese, I'd say Ishii and Suzuki, I thought, had the best weekend. Tanahashi, he was there. We'll just leave it at that. I mean, he did his air guitar. He, sold. I don't even know if he did a high fly flow when you think about it.
I'm not sure.
He was weird, at the WrestleCon Super Show. Was weird because him and Juice teaming with Callahan, so they were like heels, and so it was just, they cheer for him, but Callahan's basically, they're working a heel match, so it was a little weird and stuff. But my God, I really can't put over enough the whole entire weekend, and things that they could obviously do is make sure you start your show on time, like Bloodsport right off the bat. It was like, I think we were 45 minutes late starting. It's like, come on, guys. Keep it going. Get started. You know, things that stand out to you at WrestleCon, I mean, at Mania Weekend, is the like having the gimmick shows like Bloodsport and Janela Spring Break. Another thing you can do that's make you stand out is start your show on time and end it on time. Because they're running behind pretty much intermissions, I think we're wiped off. There was the only intermission that there was, I think, after was at Bloodsport. Everything else, there was no intermissions. They dropped it because it was just like, we're already running behind. Why do an intermission type of thing?
I think the Bloodsport intermission, a lot of people have given them flack for it, but I think it was a stream issue that they were trying to fix from what I've heard, because the stream went down in that match, and then that's when they started the intermission.
Okay. And, I had no problem with it being long. I mean, you're working it, it's kind of just like the WXW shows. I mean, those shows, those aren't long either, because you're working that type of style in a way. The most you're going usually is 8 or 10 minutes. So, I mean, and when you have X amount of things. And, it's funny, you have Loki supposed to main event. And I pre-booked my shirt, so I got this kick-ass Bloodsport shirt. But it has fucking Loki listed in the main event on the back, where it would be so much cooler if it had Minoru Suzuki listed and he came to play. On a sad note, man, we lost Bruno Sammartino and Paul Jones this weekend. I'm a big Bruno guy. Paul Jones, there's not a ton of footage on him. I mean, most people remember him in his 80s run as a manager in Crockett. But he was a hell of a worker back in the 70s. And actually, if you have a network, you guys should do a search. I can't remember the episode, but search Paul Jones versus Jack Briscoe. And it's in the Mid-Atlantic archives there. And they have a hell of a 15-minute match. And it's a really great match. You can see what type of really good worker Paul Jones is. Do you have anything to say about Bruno and Paul?
I'm with you. I mean, gutted, especially Bruno. I mean, think about him at the period of time that he was on top in WWF, and I guess you forget just how young he was. He lived a really, really full life with just his background even before getting into wrestling. Because, I mean, realistically, I mean, 82, does it seems like he's been around forever, and to be 82, it's not, you know, it's not 100. It's definitely old, and, you know, I mean, he's not one of those guys where you say he's gone too soon, really. I mean, realistically, he lived a long, full life. He was very healthy and all that, but still, it's kind of just crazy to think he's gone, you know?
Because he's such that larger-than-life character where he's like Zeus in a way, where you never think he'd die type of thing, but, you know.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. I mean, yeah, the guy is, I mean, legendary. And he was a living legend, unfortunately, you know, no longer. But the legend is forever, as they say.
Exactly. I mean, Tim, anything you want to add before we head in?
I went to a Maverick Pro show last weekend. Okay. It was had a lot of big names on it for a smaller promotion out here in California. They normally run up in the kind of in the hills near Ventura, but they were running in Burbank. A show called Hollywood Dreams, and with a show that had an amazing three-way tag with the Work Horseman, Ugly Duckling, Zero Gravity, really good three-way main event with guys like Keith Lee, JT Dunn, and Killer Cross in there. A phenomenal women's match with Jordan Grace versus Katie Lee Burchill, which I was really impressed with how good Jordan was there. Great three-way with B-Boy Fred Yehi and a guy, Keita Murray, that I was not familiar with, who was really fucking good.
You think they're relying on the three-way gimmick a little too much?
Too many three-ways, for sure. I mean, the opener was a three-way also with Andrew Everett. They were booked a lot of people to get a lot of people on this card. They had a mixed tag match with a couple girls from Texas. Unfortunately, it was probably not the top of the list when it comes to my picks for girls in Texas. That's what I told my friend that was there. I was like, I actually follow the Texas indie scene pretty well, and these are not the girls that I would have booked from there.
Who was it?
Machiko and Lainey Luck.
A Lainey Luck guy. And who's the other one?
Machiko. I don't know if you've seen her. She's got red hair and she's kind of got supposed to be a Japanese gimmick, but she's definitely not Japanese.
Oh yeah, I've not seen her.
Yeah, I saw her.
Yeah, and yeah, Lainey Luck is she's really hit or miss.
Yeah, and so with all that said, with all those big names, with everything that was there, match of the night for me, Austin Theory versus Chris Bay, local guy. But Austin Theory really brought it, man. I was pretty impressed. I was impressed with him over Mania Weekend as well. I've kind of told people, you know, here and there, like, obviously he's kind of a new part of Evolve, where he's more about the character work than the in-ring, you know, five-star classics. But, man, he's still trained by AR Fox. He could still go with basic for big-time spots and being in position and even doing a couple big spots of his own. So I was really impressed with him, seeing him live. So I'm going to continue to watch, see how he does now with you know, having the WWN title and probably a bigger focus in the WWN family as a whole. See how this guy progresses, because he was pretty good.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the when they pop up the matches from Access on the network, which I hear that's what's going to happen. So,
yeah, because there's some big matches there, too.
Yeah, so I'm hoping for that, to check that out. Yeah, I'm going to Sabotage in a couple weeks.
Nice. They run here,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they have Rachel Ellering versus Cobra Moon. So that should be a lot of fun. ACH is working Cody Lane, which I think will be a lot of fun. So I'm going to check that one out. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I got my NXT running San Antonio. So I bought tickets for that.
Is it a house show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're probably going to I bet they recorded some of it for TV.
Yeah, those shows are always fantastic. The NXT shows, the high kind of house shows I've gone to, are really good.
Yeah, exactly. So hey, let's we'll talk about some of that later on in the upcoming weeks. Let's move on into CWF Mid Atlantic. And
I guess actually there might be one noteworthy thing to say as we get into our reviews, is that we're not going to be reviewing NWL anymore, because they don't exist anymore.
They don't exist, and that's just disappointing. I was really digging a lot of the workers, especially Jeremy Wyatt. I hope he finds a high-profile spot for himself, because he deserves it, you know?
Yeah, I heard St. Louis Anarchy is kind of taking the place. We'll see. I think that they've been off and on, and they disappeared even recently, so the idea that they're coming back, I guess, and taking over, I don't know. We'll see. I'm looking forward to it, if they are going to be the successor and actually bring something on. But I was going to say, I don't know if you want to keep the triad going, but there's a couple options on the table. I guess we'll talk about what we're going to replace that with, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I thought we'd do it off air or something.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess get into CWF here.
Yeah, okay. Well, we open up with, I gotta say, I thought overall, I thought technically-wise, this show was much better than it had been from a production standpoint. You actually heard commentary. The camera angles weren't just horrific. So it was actually improved on that side. Well, what about you? What do you
think? Definitely better. Still some issues. I think the sound, the audio quality is still off a bit.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that fullness. It comes through a little tinny, which is interesting. But yeah, I definitely see that was kind of my big takeaway. And before it was like almost night and day. And with this episode, it feels a little bit closer to the how it was before.
Yep. And we open up with Aspen Rose versus Willow Nightingale. What do you think of this match?
This was, I mean, we talked about the production issues, and I feel bad to even do this, but, I mean, this seems like a production issue here as well that they did. We've got CL Party. She opens up the show saying, let's continue with women's action, which was very kind of glaring for me. And then after this match is over, when they go into the next match, she says, you know, she's opening the episode saying, you know, welcome to CWF Worldwide. Yeah. So that was a little, I don't know.
Her timing was completely off.
Yeah, they could have edited that out. That was the way that they paced, or the way that they kind of set everything up was incorrect.
Amateur hour, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, that's just a little thing. The match, I thought, was good. I thought Willow looked good showing off her power. Aspen was good underneath, being scrappy, but not baby-facing herself, still taking cheap shots. I thought a good, solid win for Willow coming out of this to as a debut, and obviously someone that they're going to at least do something with. I always find it interesting the way that they seem to use Aspen. They use her semi-regularly. She seems to be relatively friendly with people who within CWF and, you know, online and all that, but she kind of seems to be used as like an almost jobber to the stars level kind of talent, which is interesting to me. I also wonder if Nightingale is in here replacing Priscilla Kelly, as it seemed like they were starting to do something with her, and then, you know, she's obviously, I think she's in Japan right now, that's why she missed the WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
She's getting around more, so maybe Nightingale is coming in. That's why they're doing essentially the same thing they did with Kelly, giving her a win over Aspen Rose to then reestablish her. Nightingale, I think, is going to be out here for AWS pretty soon. I'm excited to see her live after now seeing her on CWF. Yeah, I thought this was pretty good, you know, but again, the production stuff was a little off.
Yep. I agree to everything you said there. And that leads us to the Dawsons, and they cut a promo, and I thought that was really well done here. And that rolls us into the Dawsons, and Ray Kandrak comes out. They do a little jokes about Cool J. I'm like, okay, why do we need this? We don't really need that. But he brings out his partner, and it's Mike Mars. And I like Kandrak and Mars as a team. And I thought this was a good, solid 2.5-star tag match. I thought it had a decent shine to start. I like the psychology going after Mars's leg during the heat. And Mars and Kandrak, I thought, were really interesting as a team. And I thought overall it was a fun match. You know, nothing like earth-shattering or, you know, reinventing the wheel. But I thought it was a good, solid match to have on your card. What about you?
Very same takes for me, really, there. I thought the best part of the match was the promo stuff, especially from the Dawson starting out. Kandrak's really good at what he does. And I liked Mars in there. It was kind of, you know, good Haas stuff here. Liked the Dawsons working over Mars's leg, playing off of just kind of cutting the big guy down. Even though they're all equally Haases, you get that for the heels being kind of the more conniving of the two teams. Kandrak just has a really great aura, and him partnering up with Mars helps lend some more credibility to Mars, even if he already has plenty. I thought the double headbutt was a fantastic spot. I thought, again, the Dawsons do really good with these finishes, with a lot of hoopla going on and then distractions, and then they get the cheap win. That's real old school Southern kind of psychology for heels to get all their wins that way, but I think they do a good job with it. So I'm with you. Yeah, 2.5-star tag match. Fantastic stuff on the card. You know, it's not going to blow anybody away at the big WrestleCon super show, but it's good for the just weekly TV in and out, you know.
Yeah. And what do you think of a Logan East in the Rue versus Cam Carter?
I thought Carter was great here. I talked about questioning his babyface kind of mannerisms before, but here I think he's back on track. He's slapping hands with the fans. He's dancing a little bit. He's, you know, playing up a little bit to the crowd, just having a good time. I thought that was fantastic for him. Gets the crowd behind him. I like Logan in the start, trying to keep it slow, but as soon as Cam gets rolling, Logan seems to be trying to keep up with him, which is a bad move as he can't keep up. Did like the cutoff from Logan, though, and then he instantly slows down.
Yeah, I really
did
like that. I like the boot. You're talking about the boot?
Yes, the boot, yeah. And then ramming the head into the post after that to really cement it, and then slowed everything down. I thought that was really good. Logan as a domineering heel is great. Cam, nice fiery under baby, you know, fiery babyface hope spots that the crowd gets into over and over again. Great natural charisma. These two guys, honestly, are becoming two of the better younger guys in wrestling right now. Two guys to definitely be watching, and they're paired up perfectly with the heel and babyface dynamics. Everything about it done super well. Cam gets the win with the middle rope 450. Is it Cross? I can't. Matt Cross? No, not Matt Cross. Is the wrestler? I'm trying to remember what this cross is named. But he comes out to tell Cam he's getting a shot at the RGL title and makes it feel important. Big deal. Good stuff, all in all. Like I said, these two guys are great. They had great chemistry together. Great babyface heel dynamics. It makes a match that you can get really invested in. Just really good stuff all around on this match.
Yeah, the only thing is it feels like LaRue has lost a lot of his steam since losing to Everett at Battlecade.
Yeah.
And this is our first time seeing him, and he loses again. I understand. I mean, it's a decision. Carter's charisma was really off the chain here. Nice, fun start. I love the boot, like you said, to set up the heat. Really good, solid wrestling here. I give it like 2 3/4, leaning towards 3 stars. I liked everything they were doing. I just would have liked them to tighten up the narrative a little bit. I think I would have liked to see LaRue on top a little bit longer. That's, you know, splitting hairs. And then, of course, when they tease Everett, they're teasing an Everett versus Cam Carter match. So I hope they deliver on that. And I'm not just teasing us for shits and grins because that's not what I need. We've gone through with CWF. It still feels like, you know, it's dominated by Trevor. I understand that. But it seems like everyone else seems to be floundering almost. Like, there's not a whole lot of strong narratives going on right now with a lot of the talent. Eric Andrews has the golden ticket, so there's something going on with him. The Dawsons have the tag belt, so they're doing something there. Your TV title is kind of like, you know, whenever Hurricane feels like coming into the area to work, he works. So it's just kind of like, you know, it's almost like the TV title is almost vacant because he's not working regularly. And the TV belt is something that should be on defended at least 2 or 3 times a month on TV, on your TV program. We haven't seen that. Kane and Sharp, they're fun, but that's not the end game for them. So it feels like they're floating. Richards and McAllister are fine because that feels like it's that up and coming tag team that they're going to be pushing. Wilkins is just coming off a program, so they don't really have him going forward anywhere. Eric Royal, my understanding was they were going to do some fun stuff with him when he got the TV belt, but then they switched over creative-wise, and now he's kind of floundering, and he's a great talent. It almost feels like it's just like – it almost feels like it's Trevor and Eric Andrews to a lesser extent, and everyone else is like – they're getting crumbs on the table, if you will. And nothing's peaking, nothing hooks you because if you look here, you look at Aaron Biggs, he has like 5 different tag partners since he's broken up from Mecca. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm just not feeling it. I still like the talent, but it doesn't feel like they're putting the talent in position to succeed as much as I wanted to see it. What were your thoughts where they're going forward with a lot of this stuff? Because it just feels like we're on a treadmill almost.
Yeah, I definitely agree with pretty much the entire of your sentiments there. It's kind of felt like that ever since the switchover. There is a lot of treadmill. There's a lot of kind of samey stuff. There's, unfortunately, a lot of stuff that seems rudderless. And I hate to say it, but I feel like there's a lot of backing guys that I wouldn't be backing.
Yeah.
And pushing guys in a way that almost feels like old boys club and not about.
Yeah, like right now, Eric Andrews, he's the golden ticket guy. His heat was, he had Honky Tonk Man heat, and now they're trying to reinvent the wheel with him, so I'm not buying that. The Trevor Lee Long title matches are kind of getting thin. Like, I wasn't blown away by the Skyler match, and just because it might be because of the technical aspects of not having Grant being the one who's shooting it and adding all this stuff together, so that might have something to do with it. I'm not as invested in Trevor as I was 2 years ago. Or maybe it just feels like, okay, here, we're going to get another long... Oh, Trevor's in the main event. We're going to get another long Trevor match, where we get it. But, man, switch it up. I mean, show some versatility. I mean, we all know he's a versatile worker. I mean, because he works everywhere else, unlike he does in CWF. But sometimes, man, sometimes do some of that stuff. Because we just make it so it's not so monotonous. And he's hit that Okada wall for me in a way where... We just know he's going long, and it's like, okay, you're in for the ride. You know he's going long. So I don't see anybody getting ready to face Trevor. He's almost out of contenders. We've seen him face everybody and beat them all, and then some. So where's that story going? I don't know. And then you hear that him and... spoiler alert, him and Chet win the thing. I'm going to see how it plays out, but does Trevor really need that? Need the Kernodal Cup? Does he need that at this point?
Let's
see how it plays out. Maybe they do something with him and Chet and we're set something up, but it feels like having Trevor would have been good to set up a challenger or something different. And they didn't do that, but I mean, maybe they had. Obviously, they have a different plan. Let's see where it goes. I'm kind of glad we're moving out of Kernodal Cup because I know they're focusing on people and tag teams getting geared up for this big show. So maybe coming out of Kernodal Cup, it'll splinter off, and some of these people will get some better angles, and then we'll see where we're going from there. Any thoughts? Anything you want to add?
No. I mean, I feel like you got pretty much everything there. I mean, I'm with you on everything you're saying, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not blaming the talent, because the talent's there. Just, you gotta highlight them, put them in positions to be as successful as they possibly can. And, it just feels... I mean, besides Trevor, it feels like everyone else is, taking a step back. Besides Trevor and Eric Andrews... And I feel like everybody is taking a step back from where they were last year, except for maybe Ethan. I think Ethan's higher on the pecking. Ethan Sharp, because he's tagging with Kane, so I think that's an improvement. But for the most part, I think most other people have taken a step back on where they were last year at this time. On that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll talk some NXT.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and... the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place Simi Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. We're going to talk some NXT. I guess before we talk the TV show, we should cover, NXT had just recycled. It almost did the show. We did the reshuffling of the deck like they usually do around Mania. We had Drew McIntyre got called up. Ember Moon got called up.
Andrade.
Cena Almas got called up with Zelina Vega. Sanity got called up. Who else got called up?
I think that's it that I can think of. Yeah, I can't think of anybody else. I think that was it.
Yeah, okay, that might be it. There might be more that I'm just not thinking of. Right.
Iconics. You said Iconics, though, right?
Oh, yeah, Iconics. No, I didn't say them. Okay, Iconics got called up. So they did a reshuffling of the deck. I think because of the Bobby Fish injury, I don't think originally Roddy Strong was how they had him turn in that match. I don't think that was the plan all along.
Yeah,
It happened because of, I think that was the reaction to Fish's injury, so I'm not going to critique the angle too much because they had to do something, right?
I'm not going to critique that part of the angle, but I do want to point out that this, and there's something else as well, that for me kind of hurts just, I don't know, my enjoyment of the storylines and stuff and believability. It just kind of irks me in a way in that they took this random team. I mean, yes, they're the tag champions, but they throw them into a three-way, and then now somehow in the end they're able to win the Dusty Rhodes Cup in one match. Like, it just, I don't know, that kind of annoyed me. But, you know, that's just like a little thing.
They weren't in it. Yeah.
Yeah, that part of the angle really annoys me because it's like you win the tournament because you win this one match where you're actually just putting your titles on the line. I don't know. Like, that kind of got to me.
That was an integrity issue, I agree.
Yeah, the Roddy angle, though, with the turn, I agree with you that I don't think it at all that that was the plan. And I do think that it smells a little bit of, like you talked about, it's so clear Pete Dunne's going to turn, so let's turn Roddy instead and then go into this group that he's already been fighting for months. Like, yeah, I just...
felt very NWO, WCW booking, where you would see Luger or somebody.
Sting.
Or somebody who was fighting, Randy Savage fighting the NWO for 6 months, and all of a sudden, the next week, he's NWO. So that's kind of felt like with Roddy Strong.
Yeah, I mean, talk about, you know, Big Show, him switching so much, but I think he fought with and was a member of the NWO three separate times. He kept switching back and forth. So, like, yeah, that was in the short time that he was even in WCW with the NWO. So, yeah. I mean, that kind of stuff, I can definitely see where you're coming from. This is very similar.
Yep. Then we open, so let's get into the show proper then. And then we open up with Gargano and Candice LeRae coming out, and they pretty much cut a really good, strong babyface promo, which set the tone. Well, what do you think here, man?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because Johnny doesn't seem to me much different than the indies, but it works here. I mean, the guy just, he gets over it, where his aw shucks nice guy promo always seemed a little bit disingenuous to me. On the indies, it works here and comes across a lot more believable. You got Candace there, the wife. She's just getting started. While it feels like it's time for him to go, but he's gonna hang around and wait. So I hope that hopefully they play something off of that, because it is kind of interesting to seem like he's almost staying in NXT longer just to be there while she's there, because it does seem like he's pretty much done. He was even out of the company. And I guess that's my chance to point out the other, you know, the other thing that I'll say from the TakeOver booking that, you know, it makes you question, because it's always, well, NXT doesn't get this stuff right or wrong. NXT does this stuff right, and it's two kind of glaring ones to me, is I don't buy into a loser leaves town stip where you can then just have the, you know, the commissioner or whoever say, well, you win this match, you come back, and the match doesn't even involve the people who were in the original match. Like, to me, I'm like, does Almas get no say in this? Like, he's the one who beat Johnny to send him packing. Why is he now forced to accept that Johnny's able to come back if he beats Ciampa? You know what I mean? It's just...
No, I agree.
That's another logic hole where I'm just like, how does that... Like, why would Almas not be losing his shit here? He was done with this fucker, and now you just bring him back? So, yeah, it's like... To me, I'm just like, this is the kind of stuff that NXT is supposed to get right. So I question... I kind of get concerned when they mess this stuff up.
Yeah, I talked to a former booker who I have a lot of respect for with his booking mind. And he would have booked it where Gargano lost at NXT here to Ciampa. And then he shows up. They take Shane out at Mania, and he shows up as Daniel Bryan's secret partner and have the ultimate babyface tag team at Mania.
That's not a bad idea.
You know, because where does Gargano go from this point? Yeah, because he's already kind of... Yeah, he's a babyface, so they kind of look past it a little bit, the audience. And they love him so much, and Candace is the ultimate babyface. But yeah, just kind of, where does he go from here? We'll see where his story is. I mean, we kind of find out where he is going. He's challenging Aleister Black at the end of the show. So, but we'll see where we're going.
Well, then we get I do want to give credit to Moro, I think, here on the call. And, you know, obviously, who knows with the production and everything. But when he points out that... You know, Johnny is the... I think he actually says it later, but I'll just mention it here. Johnny is the last person to have ever pinned Black, and so him getting the title shot makes sense. I thought that was a great little touch.
Yeah, you know, yeah, he did it later on. Yeah, it was fantastic. I agree. And then we get a Killian Dane promo, and I thought it was really cool how they did this from the rooftops and all that jazz. It made it unique in a way. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was done really well. I'm with you. And I like the music in the background, even as cheesy and stupid as it almost seems. I thought it worked.
It works for Killian Dane. Then we get Ricochet versus Fabian Archer. A fun match, I thought. I hope Ricochet learns not to be a Rock knockoff, because that's not what we need. We need him to be the best Ricochet possible. And I hope they teach him how to work on some of his deficiencies, which is talking. And cutting a promo, not trying to do Rock light. We don't need that. All right, we get it. He was your hero growing up, but be the best Ricochet you can be.
We got Rock light in Ricochet, and you got, I guess, Rock heavy in Keith Lee, right?
Exactly. What'd you make of the match, man?
Loved the match. I thought it was a weird booking decision, but you know, Ricochet's kind of semi-debut, TV debut against Fabian Eichner, a guy who it seems like they have some kind of, you know, plans for, or at least some liking to. They have some shine on the guy, and it's just like, oh, wow, this is a weird match. Like, which guy is going to be the feature? And then I think that it was kind of iron sharpens iron here. It's not supposed to be either guy is the big feature. I mean, Ricochet clearly is bigger, upper trajectory, quicker, but I think that they also weren't trying to devalue Eichner here. Because I thought the opening shine was super quick. It felt like Ricochet hit like a head scissors, and that was it. And then Eichner kind of starts working over the heat. I liked his focus on the midsection. Good way to ground the flyer is take away all of his core strength. So I thought that was good. I thought that Ricochet was hitting a lot of his flashy stuff, which I thought was pretty impressive, you know. And it feels very, very similar to his indie work, just maybe a little bit, you know, shorter. A little bit slower, but realistically, it didn't seem like they took much out of him. I thought that that they did there's like a superplex. Eichner's going for the superplex, and Ricochet just does the punches, and then, oh, he flies off and then lands in perfect position for the 630. I kind of found that irksome. I didn't think that they would actually let him do something like that in NXT, because it's just such a bad transition, really, for a big spot like that. But whatever. The post-match promo from Ricochet I thought was good, actually, even though he was kind of blown up, clearly.
Yeah.
I thought that that actually might have helped him not be overthinking it and kind of trying to be cool and play the rock. He came across more himself there.
Which leads us into an EC3 vignette. I thought this was great. This just highlights his strengths. You know, he's good, has good body, has charisma, has a good look. And I thought the vignette captured all that. What do you think, man?
Yeah, and that's where this is where EC3 is going to be the guy for them, is doing, you know, promo videos, vignettes, stuff like that.
Yeah, but if he has psychology, he can develop into a good worker.
I mean, he's had good matches, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, he's definitely had good matches.
Yeah,
so
he can. He definitely can.
But it's something he needs to make more of his calling card in a way. Then we got the Lars Sullivan interview. I thought this was interesting. What about you?
I thought it was... I still thought it worked here, but I wish that they hadn't done the music on his too, because I kind of liked that it was the kind of Killian Dane sanity thing, that they play the music during the promos. But the promo itself I thought was very good.
Yeah. And then we get the debut of the War Raiders. I like the name War Machine better.
Yes.
To be fair. It was funny when we were at the NXT show live, everyone's chanting War Machine when they come out. And, like, the group behind us, obviously, they didn't follow anything but WWE, because they're like, who are these guys? Oh, wait, they're chanting, what are they chanting at them? Oh, and then the vignette, then the graphic comes out, War Raiders. Oh, they're chanting War Raiders. I felt like turning around, no, they're chanting War Machine, but whatever. I was getting a kick out of me. I mean, you don't have to watch everything. It just sometimes you're a little surprised. But they had, you know, a dominating squash. They did what they needed to do to get over here, and it was a pretty good, pretty strong statement. What about you? What do you think?
I don't like their music. I don't like that they're the Raiders instead of Machine or whatever. But the squash was great. They looked dominant. They beat the crap out of these guys. They have great spots. They work super well together, and they're insanely impressive. I mean, you compare them to AOP, and I think that that's an easy comparison to make for a lot of people because they're back to back.
Two big guys, yeah. They're
two big guys back to back. Really, AOP leaves, they come in. But War Machine is kind of perfect way that they did it, and I don't know if it was just a happy accident or what. But I mean, you have AOP who come in and they're kind of basic, and the stuff that they're doing is.
Oh yeah, AOP, they got called up to the roster.
Yeah, yeah, they're on the main. Oh, did you not say them too?
Yeah, okay. I forgot them. I didn't write any of it down, so that's probably something to do.
Yeah, and I actually haven't watched any of it, so I am just like kind of guessing on what I can remember. So, I kind of think that it was a happy coincidence, maybe, or happy accident, because AOP started out really bare bones, and they're just doing big man, basic big man power spots. They kind of developed into, not necessarily being spot guys, but definitely developed their aura, their mystique, and the way that they wrestled improved. Yep. But you got War Machine, who out the gate are cutting edge, fast pace, high tech, double teams, crazy power, everything. So it's like, you know, it doesn't, they don't look diminished, because you're just like, oh, they're just like a knockoff of Authors of Pain. Oh, it's just the same thing over again, rehashed. Because even though it's very similar, their style is completely different. So it stands out still.
Yeah, that's very fair.
And I think if you went from like a War Machine type team who's just so good and flashy to AOP coming in bare bones, it would have been way worse. That's why I say the timing was almost perfect to have them following Authors of Pain instead of the other way around.
No, I'm with you completely on that too. And then we get Shayna Baszler interview, where she pretty much puts the women's locker room on notice, playing the bully champion. You know, this is perfect for her character, good character work. Well, what about you? What were your thoughts here?
I fucking loved this. I thought that Shayna came across just in complete control, cocky badass, plays her character to a T. Every little piece was perfect. I mean, as you know, I could see people saying it's stupid, but again, it's anecdotal, but I've known these people. If you play sports, if you get into anything with a little bit of machismo and a little bit of a kind of physical contact, you find these kind of people who they're so cocky and over the top that they almost pretend like their life is in a movie. So even though
I was one of them people. I remember in high school basketball, I remember I was a sixth man, and my coach came in and said, this guy just lit us up for 15 points in the first quarter. He goes, stop him. And I think he scored 4 points the rest of the game. Afterwards, we're shaking hands. We're going, good game, good game. And I get to him, I go, good game. And he goes, yeah, if you ever play that dirty with me, I'll knock you out. And then I end up punching him right in the jaw. And we get pulled away. Flashback to 7 weeks later. Now I have a broken hand from an injury. And this asshole sees me in the stands, fucking comes to me and goes, yeah, I'm glad you broke your hand, you fucking piece of shit. And I then get up and I'm about to clubber him over the hand with my cast. And my friend tackles me. I end up going home, cutting off the fucking cast, taping up, and go and play this asshole because of machismo. Right,
yeah,
there.
Exactly. So, yeah, so she pops in the locker room and she rips down Ember Moon's name and she puts the Queen of Spades up on the locker to say that's her space now. And she's just marking her territory, basically, and saying this is mine. If anyone has a problem with the way things are going to be now, they can get out of here. And then even as Dakota Kai is just trying to leave, as she tells people that she can leave, that's like an excuse for her to get up even more in her face. Yep. And just bullying. And oh my God, I just thought
she
this was so
the weakest person in the room.
Yes. Yeah. And even after she's saying, you know, if you don't like the way I'm doing things, you can get out. And she's just trying to get out because you're telling her to. And she's like, oh, no, you really took that at face value. I'm not going to just let you leave. And, you know, she's just, you got a problem with it? And just getting up. And I was just like, this is amazing. Shayna rules this whole division. She's on top of the mountain. And I just thought this was fantastic.
Yep, agreed. And then we get a vignette of the NXT finest Kona Reeves. I don't know. I'm a hard pass on it, but we'll see. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this just reeks of no way Reeves, no way.
Yeah,
Reeves.
Oh, no way Jose is up.
Yeah, we got to replace him. You know, let's get the new no way Jose. What do we got? That's all they're looking for. You know.
Yep. Then we get a Pete Dunne walking to his car, and they tease his revenge on Roddy Strong. You know, good continuation of the angle. You know, didn't give us anything really, but it still reminds us that they have business going forward. What you make of it?
Yeah, same. I mean, Dunn looks good as he's just kind of saying it. Oh, I'll tell you in 2 weeks when I'm back or whatever. You know.
Yep. Then we got Lars Sullivan versus Killian Dane in a no DQ match. Fun big man battle. You know, I liked how they looked like they were in slow-mo a little bit, but that's cool because they're big guys. They're not supposed to be working the neck-based speed. A lot of big power moves, a lot of hot spot moments. I enjoyed it for what it was. What'd you make?
Movie monster fight. These guys did a really good job of going back and forth, selling the big man brawl. Turn up the violence compared to just their regular matches. Really help the Dane's kind of mouth or nose area gets busted open to kind of sell that as well, the extra violence to the match. Love Lars going for the diving headbutt, getting the chair thrown into his face. I thought that was good. Big dive through the table divide through the table in the corner. I thought was good. By the end, Dane is pouring blood as Lars powers up and slams him to the mat. Really good psychology for, like I said, a monster movie fight, they did kind of sell for each other and go at slow pace, but then also we're doing the big time stunts and stuff that comes across, like I said, it would be on the big screen.
And it built, yeah.
Yeah, it built and it had drama and it had special effects almost, so, yeah, you know, good stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we get Johnny and Candace video package to set up the main event. You know, I thought it was perfectly fine. What do you think of?
I mean, good stuff. Going to the main event. Excited for the match.
Yeah, then we get Undisputed Era, and I guess they'll be there next week. I'm like, do we really need the devs to tell us that they'll be there next week? Whatever. Felt like kind of time filler here. And then we got Zelina Vega versus Candice LeRae. I mean, Vega has proven that she's an incredible manager. She comes out, she's looking hot as hell, smoking hot, and she is a natural. I would have done the match a lot like Candice kicking her ass for most of the match. Because, I mean, to me, Zelina is still a manager first and foremost, not a wrestler. So I would have Candice just beat her ass for a while and then get a cheap shot in and have Zelina get her heat that way. But they did it a little bit more 50-50 at first. And then Zena almost had to come out and help her. And that's when Gargano comes out. But eventually Candice, the babyface, goes over. But yeah, Zelina just shows, man, that she's the package. And I hope it translates on the main stage. I think you should, because she's such an incredible performer. And I hope, I'm counting on them doing a heel run with Almas. But eventually, he has a babyface run in him on the main roster. And I hope we don't lose her in the long run, because she's way too talented to just be a one shot, you know. And overall, I thought this match was tremendous. I thought it was a hell of a lot of fun. And then that morphs into Johnny challenging Black, and Black accepts, and that's when Morrow threw the great line down. Going forward there, what do you make of everything there?
Yeah, I agree with you pretty strongly. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with Zelina as the manager. You know, Vince obviously doesn't like managers, they say, or isn't into it anymore. So to see where that...
Because it looks like they kicked, like Paul Ellering's already been fired. Yeah,
which,
or
I mean,
almost...
that's not surprising. I didn't expect Ellering to go on the road, you know? I mean, even though he was good at the act, I don't think he's going to do it, because I don't think he wanted to really even be doing it to begin with. I think we both kind of mused that we thought it was all about trying to get Rachel into the performance center, you know?
Yeah, and then I heard later on that he hates, doesn't want her in the business, so...
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I wonder what that was like for Chris Hero, working with, girlfriend's dad all that time, that they were both down there in NXT together.
Yeah.
We'll see. Speaking of, Rachel Ellering's actually coming out here to California for that MPW, so that'll be fun.
Awesome.
I liked Zelina Vega. She's doing a little bit of a Who Wore It Best with Aikido from DDT here with those peekaboo hips on her gear. So I thought that was a nice thumbs up. I'll have to see them side by side to decide who wins out on the kind of outfit there. I thought that, you know, I mean, I've seen Vega wrestle in TNA. She was definitely much better here. Adopting some of Almas's mannerisms, I thought was good. For her, I did like Candice hitting the violence party. That kind of goes back to kind of her time in PWG and all that, but I'm not a huge fan of her kind of just adopting Johnny's stuff. Really makes it feel like she doesn't have her own character just because Johnny's so over. But I mean, that's wrestling. I guess I don't need to bring like feminist kind of ideals into judging wrestling.
And the double finish is a good way to finish the Almas Zelina Vega character.
Yeah, and I did like that. They do the mirror Gargano escape. You get the happy ending for the newly married couple. And Johnny calls out Black. And, yeah, that line from Morrow is killer. And it was a good episode of NXT, honestly.
Agreed. Just setting the plate up. Start all over again. Be built to the next takeover. So that's exactly... they have this thing down to a science. Yeah, they have flaws. And they had, like, recently there's... You know, we talked about the Roddy Strong angle and... Along with some other things. But, you know, most of the time it's consistently good, at least. With that said, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll discuss the Rev Pro show over Mania weekend.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back with Talking the Revolution Pro Show. And it opens up with David Starr versus Martin Stone. What were your thoughts here, Timothy?
David Starr's heel stick here in RPW is not great for me. I feel like they're playing off the conspiracy stuff too much to where it feels just like a complete knockoff of Jericho and WCW. That said, the match itself, I thought, had some similarities to their match in PWX, which I think was that a submission match or was it a rounds match? I can't even remember now. But I felt
it was,
like,
no rope break.
No rope break match. Okay. That was it. I felt like this without that gimmick involved, made the start to this a little bit better, because they were able to kind of, they skipped out the feeling out process because they're pretty familiar with each other. They get into it pretty quickly. Loved the double headbutt spot. I thought that was a cool little thing that they did there. Felt like Starr's comeback really came across a little facey for me. And I think part of that is because I've gotten to like him so much as a face. I think about him, like, I remember thinking he was a good heel before. But he just, he's not, I don't think he's a very good heel anymore. I liked the commentary, though, calling that out, saying he's spending a lot of time playing to this crowd that he supposedly hates or claims to hate. I thought that was good. Liked the finish with the monkey flip counter, slip down. Starr gets the feet on the ropes for the pin. But yeah, I just think that, unfortunately, I think that annoyed me a little bit too much, that Starr works too much like a face. And then you had Stone, who's not necessarily the most kind of traditional baby face, so I think it messes with my enjoyment of the match when there's not that clearly defined heel and face. I gave it 3 stars, though. I still enjoyed the match. But yeah, I think that dynamic messed with it for me.
Yeah, I went 2 3/4. I really liked Stone's ankle trap. I thought that was really good. I thought there was a lot of good, solid wrestling here. And I thought Starr had a lot of good moments here. It wasn't, like, amazing or anything. And that leads us to Adam Brooks versus Brian Cage. I thought this was, like, in the 2.5-star range. I like Brooks attacking early, wanting to get on top of Cage. Cage strength takes over. Turns more into, like, some back-and-forth action. Brooks low blows, and I thought that the low blow was really good. It looked good here. But overall, like a 2.5-star match, it didn't blow away. What's your thoughts?
Very similar. I also gave it 2.5 stars. I liked Cage using his power at times, throwing Brooks around. But then I thought that, you know, him doing the standing moonsault, him doing kind of Cage, all the spots that he does here. Not even just the, like, Cage does too much thing, but the, like, The fact that he's doing it against someone who, I don't know, I don't dislike Brooks, but I think in some ways people don't know what he is, and they think of him as more of like a flying guy, but because he wrestles with Ospreay and stuff. But realistically, I mean, when you have a guy who's probably got like close to 100 pounds of muscle on Brooks, and then you see him doing the same level of athleticism that Brooks can do, I think it really kind of ruins Brooks, honestly, to me, because I'm just like, why would I buy into him at all? He can barely keep up with this guy who's fucking just a genetic freak.
Right.
And then it kind of plays into the same thing as the match before with Star. I mean, Brooks is kind of, to me, his wrestling doesn't match the heel thing until he kicks people in the dick and stuff. I just don't get heel from him, but he kind of tries to pretend like he's a heel, so that kind of ruins it for me. So, yeah, I mean, to me, it's even more glaring than Star in that fact. He gets the women kicking the guy in the dick, and like I said, I also gave it 2.5 stars. I liked Cage in here. I think that Brooks is good, but I just think that he needs to do something to stand out more to me, because while I do like him, I think that he can only get so far being the guy who's had good matches with Ospreay and is from Australia. I need to see more from the guy.
Yep. And that leads us to the 6-man tag. What are your thoughts here?
I liked Rocky and Shane starting it off. I thought that Rocky did a good job.
Let me rephrase it. Hold on. It's Ibushi, Strickland, and Gordon versus Ospreay, Romero, and Chucky T.
Yeah, I thought that Rocky looked good in the start with Shane. I thought that was a good way to start the match. Kind of keeping him slow, but Shane's able to look really good, being able to counter Rocky, give him a bit of his own medicine, trying to out-grapple him. Chuck and Flip Kendrick come in, and like, I like Chuck kind of big brothering Flip, and even like on the shoulder block, kip up, he just kind of knocks him right back down. They're in and out really quickly as they kind of rush to get to Ibushi and Will being in the ring together. Crowd goes wild for that. From there, it kind of breaks down into spots. The Ibushi team are just some of the best flyers in wrestling. So they're so smooth together. All three of them can just play off of each other so much. The stuff with Ibushi and Ospreay doing stereo attacks to then on each other's teams and then ending up together is just fucking wild. As choreographed and as crazy as it seems, it's just... seeing it happen with two guys who, yeah, are like the top kind of cruiserweights of their generations, both known for just putting their bodies on the line and doing the zaniest, wackiest shit, just really feels cool and special. I thought that the only problem from there, like, I almost am more okay with the over choreographed double Pele kick, and then now they've got this big standoff. Like, to me, the part that was really glaringly fucking fake was like that Ibushi's just in the match and then he's just disappeared so that Flip Kendrick can pop into the ring to take the pin within moments. You know, it just that felt just so contrived. That said, I gave the match 3.25 for the pops. They did a good job of making Ibushi versus Ospreay seem like a big deal, special matchup that you can even.
Yeah, they did a great job of keeping them apart.
Yeah, so I thought that they did a good job of teasing the interactions but not blowing their load. So that's why I give the match what would seem like maybe a pretty high score, honestly, coming from me.
Yeah, I went 3.5. Again, Ospreay was the most over guy here, and they did a good job of teasing him in versus Strickland. I mean, him versus Ibushi. I liked how they started slow here. Getting personalities over, I thought they did a good job. Big reaction to Ibushi Ospreay squaring off. Again, we only teased it a couple times, and that's definitely a match people want to see on the big stage. All of chaos interferes. I liked the first half. Was about Exile, Ibushi's, and the leg cover. Finally, all the smoke clears, and we get Ospreay and Ibushi. I love that moment. Overall, I thought they did a good job of at least teasing the big match, if you will. And that leads us into Jeff Cobb versus Suzuki. Pretty disappointed in this match. I was expecting more, but I don't know if they mentioned it on commentary. I don't think they did, but I know Suzuki is in this match because Cobb was working the Super Show, working the Progress Show later that evening, and it looks like here Suzuki busted Cobb's nose because when we get to the Progress Show, Cobb has all this toilet paper shoved up his nose. Pretty sure Minoru busted his nose. I enjoyed this. Though we get the token chop off. Suzuki's after the leg. Cobb sells the leg. Felt very, it's hard to explain. I give it 2.5 stars, but it felt like they weren't on the same page, or they weren't there to have a great match. It was like the start of something, and so I was kind of disappointed in that. I think with getting his nose busted here, I'm pretty sure that's why they didn't go as long as I thought they were going to go. What were your thoughts here on the match?
I don't know. Do you really think do you think that they went home early?
I don't know. It just seemed flat to me.
Yeah, I mean, the flatness, I kind of understand, but I honestly think that it was just the way the match was meant to be put together, unfortunately. I've heard...
Oh, man, because it's so sad. I mean, he had a banger with Ishii at the Super Show.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Suzuki is a great worker who I think is better than Ishii, and we get this thing with Cobb. It's just one of those things.
I've heard a few people refer to this as a squash match, and a pretty good squash match. Suzuki laughing in Cobb's face as they're squaring up really annoyed me. As Suzuki continues to laugh at Cobb throughout for the weak chops and trying to fire him up. Liked Cobb blocking the hanging arm, the hanging arm bar, and then Suzuki following up with the hanging knee bar instead. And I liked the commentary seemingly trying to save the situation by saying that Suzuki is playing mind games with Cobb, and the laughing in his face is throwing him off because Cobb never sees people treat him this way, so it throws him off his game plan. I kind of liked that talking point, and it did in some ways help. But yeah, it felt like Suzuki was selling none of Cobb's strikes. Then Cobb starts to throw him around, and I liked that. Really nasty looking heel hook from Suzuki that Cobb is able to break up in the ropes, and Cobb is selling a lot, but he sells too much. It's like that was kind of the problem here. I mean, this is my argument for why I think that Jonah Rock is actually a better big man worker than Cobb, even though I love Jeff Cobb, is that, like, Cobb never protects his aura, and this match, I think, hurts his aura even more. And for a guy who theoretically is going to get more bookings in New Japan, that's the way everyone's talking, and then this is the way he gets treated by Suzuki is just fucking depressing to me. I mean, with Cobb's fucking size, and he's an Olympian, I can't believe that Suzuki didn't wrestle him with a little bit more respect, honestly. This came across like Suzuki was being very dismissive of him, and just really just kind of squashed him. The finish was fine. The legwork was good. I mean, yeah, I gave it 2.75 star. It was very disappointing, especially for me, because this was one of the matches I was the most excited for the weekend, being such a big Jeff Cobb fan. And then meanwhile, I mean, as we've been recording, I watched the Cobb versus Ishii match, and like, and that's just so much fucking better. Like, wow. Yeah. And I don't like Ishii.
We've had this talk every year where, I mean, I didn't say it this year, but a lot of people said this is going to be a breakout for Jeff Cobb. But I remember saying it last year, and he didn't have any really breakout matches. And here he had a couple breakout, but overall it was just kind of like, he also had a lot of home matches, and this is one of them.
Yeah, and I feel like, unfortunately, last year and this year, I feel like he's stuck in the wrong place, just because I think it has to do with his affiliation with Lucha Underground, and that he has to kind of work the shows that are Lucha Underground authorized, or for guys who are signed to Lucha Underground are authorized, because, I mean, he's not working the WWN shows, you know what I mean? He's not working kind of the shows, because do you think that Jeff Cobb shouldn't have been on Matt Riddle's Bloodsport? I think you're fucking crazy if you don't think he should have been, you know what I mean?
He should have, yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, just I think that that's kind of what's hurting him too. Is I mean,
I would love to see him and Dominic open the show, as opposed to whatever the guy's gimmick name was,
Kyle the Beast. Yeah, I almost think Kyle the Beast is in there because of that. I mean, if you think about it, Riddle and Cobb are buddies. You would think that they'd be booked. They're tag team fucking champions and PWG. Yep. Like, you know, I would just think that he'd be used there. So unfortunately, last year he had, I think he had at least one good match that I remember in Evolve, but that was about it. And then he was kind of, you know, shitty match with Lashley. This year, I mean, the Ishii match was good, but I don't know. I haven't watched the TNA versus Lucha Underground show.
Yeah, I didn't watch it either.
I caught a little bit of his match live when it was happening, and I don't remember thinking too much of it, but it was Matanza there. So, yeah, I just... I don't know what it is about Cobb. I mean, I'm still, obviously, I'm getting name-checked for being a psychopath for thinking Cobb is one of the best wrestlers in the world by some people. But, like, realistically, like, I just don't know what it is about him. But in these big settings, it seems to be the times when he disappoints. And then in the small rooms, in the indies, and in front of tiny crowds, seems to be where he shines. So, I don't know. I'm just kind of, I'm disappointed as well.
Agreed. And that leads us to the tag match of Aussie Open versus Juice Robinson and Tanahashi. What were your thoughts here?
I was kind of low on this match just because I felt like doing a double heat on first Juice and then Tanahashi didn't seem right for Aussie Open. I mean, why are you trying to make them heels? I could really feel that the crowd felt like they were behind both teams equally. They weren't really clearly wanting to boo Aussie Open, and I kind of respect Tanahashi for usually being pretty smart about stuff like that and calling an audible and working a heel match if he needs to in a setting. And this might have been a place where that would have probably been the best bet for him, but instead they kind of stick with it. And I thought Juice's hot tag was good, but a little lazy, a little listless, and didn't have the focus that I thought was kind of shine through in his kind of his big hot moments in G1. I love Aussie Open and just how smooth they are together, being able to use double teams as hope spots even because they just have that chemistry with each other that they could be on the same page even for a moment, then kind of go to a big kind of quadruple down with everyone together. I just think that that was really good. And then I thought that kind of saved the match for me. Fletcher goes and knocks Tanahashi off the apron and the crowd actually boos him and he makes a face and he kind of is looking like he's kind of enjoying that, kind of getting the crowd's ire a little bit up, so I thought that was good. And then the match was pretty much over after that, so unfortunately I couldn't go higher. I gave it a 3-star for really liking it, but it felt a little house showy, which I know is kind of, you know, kind of some people will judge you for using that kind of term as a put down, but it did in this setting. I was hoping for a little bit more, and I kind of, you know, even though it eventually paid off, that does hurt the entire match that I felt like trying to have Aussie Open play heel, even subtly, was not a great call here. Even if in the end it kind of paid off, it was such a small part of the match where it felt like the crowd was booing against Fletcher there that it didn't really help increase my opinion of the match overall.
And that leads us, I'm with you, I gave it 2 3/4.
Okay.
That leads us to the main event of Zack Sabre Jr. versus Ishii, and I thought this was awesome. I thought they combined their styles really well. They've worked each other now, like, I think, 2 or 3 times in Japan, or they've worked each other as part of a New Japan show, like, in the U.S. And here they did it again. I give it 4.25. I thought he had a great a season here for Mania. Ishii was strong. Those guys worked their asses off for me, I'll tell you. What are your thoughts on this match?
I give it 3.75. I'm pretty much right there with everything that you had to say there. I thought I liked Ishii working more of a traditional power game here, going for big throws and less of his kind of just dick measuring kind of stuff that he normally does. So I liked that a lot. I've got to give some credit to Zach there because more of his selling and not going, just trying to stand there throwing, trading big blows. But I did like that when Zach did throw some strikes with Ishii, Ishii sold them and gave him kind of respect there. Loved EC's arm selling throughout. Really, really well done. Great counter on the sliding D from Zach that I thought was great. And I loved the finish kind of with the taunting kicks from Zach firing up Ishii to finally put him down. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed the match here. I was really impressed. Shocked by the win. I did not expect Ishii to get the belt, so I thought that was cool too and adds to the match overall. And just, yeah, good stuff all in all, for sure.
Yep, I thought the show flowed really well. You know, business picked up for 2 or 3 really good matches, and everything else I thought was fine. On that note, man, do you have anything you want to plug or talk about before we head out?
No, I guess we'll just be back with everyone next week. And just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
And follow me at Titans of Wrestling. And the Titans are going to get together and do a Bruno tribute show. We're gonna be recording it tomorrow, so it'll be dropping next week sometime, and I hope you listen to that. Rumor has it there might be 4 of us on that show. Ooh. So that means all 4 of the Titans, so check that one out. On that note, have a great week and keep on watching the wrestling.
my turn.